Chapter 55. We have got so far east, now 855 degrees of longitude from San Francisco, that my watch cannot keep the hang of the time anymore. It has grown discouraged, and stopped. I think it did a wise thing. The difference in time between Sebastopol and the Pacific coast is enormous. When it is 6 o'clock in the morning here, it is somewhere about a week before last in California. We are excusable for getting a little tangled as to time. These distractions and distresses about the time have worried me so much that I was afraid my mind was so much affected that I never would have any appreciation of time again. But when I noticed how handy I was yet about comprehending when it was dinner time, a blessed tranquility settled down upon me, and I am tortured with doubts and fears no more. Odessa is about 20 hours' run from Sebastopol, and is the most northerly port in the Black Sea. We came here to get coal, principally. The city has a population of 133,000, and is growing faster than any other small city out of America. It is a free port, and is the great grain mart of this particular part of the world. Its roadstead is full of ships. Engineers are at work now, turning the open roadstead into a spacious artificial harbor. It is to be almost enclosed by massive stone piers, one of which will extend into the sea over 3,000 feet in a straight line. I have not felt so much at home for a long time as I did when I aced the hill and stood in Odessa for the first time. It looked just like an American city, fine, broad streets, and straight as well, low houses, two or three stories, wide, neat, and free from any quaintness of architectural ornamentation. Locust trees bordering the sidewalks, they call them acacias. A stirring, business look about the streets and the stores. Fast walkers. A familiar new look about the houses and everything. Yea, and a driving and smothering cloud of dust that was so like a message from our own dear native land that we could hardly refrain from shedding a few grateful tears and execrations in the old-time-honored American way. Look up the street, or down the street, this way or that way, we saw only America. There was not one thing to remind us that we were in Russia. We walked for some little distance, reveling in this home vision, and then we came upon a church and a hack driver, and presto, the illusion vanished. The church had a slender spire dome that rounded inward at its base, and looked like a turnip turned upside down, and the hackman seemed to be dressed in a long petticoat without any hoops. These things were essentially foreign, and so were the carriages, but everybody knows about these things, and there is no occasion for my describing them. We were only to stay here a day and a night and take in coal. We consulted the guidebooks, and were rejoiced to know that there were no sights in Odessa to see, and so we had one good, untrammeled holy day on our hands, with nothing to do but idle about the city and enjoy ourselves. We sauntered through the markets, and criticized the fearful and wonderful costumes from the back country, examined the populace as far as eyes could do it, and closed the entertainment with an ice cream debauch. We do not get ice cream everywhere, and so, when we do, we are apt to dissipate to excess. We never cared anything about ice cream at home, but we look upon it with a sort of idolatry now that it is so scarce in these red-hot climates of the East. We only found two pieces of statuary, and this was another blessing. One was a bronze image of the Duc de Richelieu, grand-nephew of the splendid cardinal. It stood in a spacious, handsome promenade, overlooking the sea, and from its base a vast flight of stone steps led down to the harbor, 200 of them, 50 feet long, and a wide landing at the bottom of every 20. It is a noble staircase, and from a distance the people toiling up it looked like insects. I mention this statue and this stairway because they have their story. Virgilio founded Edessa, watched over it with paternal care, labored with a fertile brain, and a wise understanding for its best interests, spent his fortune freely to the same end, endowed it with a sound prosperity, and one which will yet make it one of the great cities of the old world, built this noble stairway with money from his own private purse, and, well, the people for whom he had done so much, let him walk down these same steps, one day, unattended, old, poor, without a second coat to his back, and when, years afterwards, he died in Sebastopol in poverty and neglect, they called a meeting, subscribed liberally, and immediately erected this tasteful monument to his memory, and named a great street after him. It reminds me of what Robert Burns' mother said, when they erected a stately monument to his memory: Robbie, he asked them for bread and they hey guyani a stain. The people of Edessa have warmly recommended us to go, and call on the emperor, as did the Sebastopolians. They have telegraphed his majesty, and he has signified his willingness, to grant us an audience. So we are getting up the anchors and preparing, to sail to his watering place. What a scratching around there will be now. What a holding of important meetings and appointing of solemn committees. And what a furbishing up of claw hammer coats and white silk neckties. As this fearful ordeal we are about to pass through pictures itself to my fancy in all its dread sublimity, I begin to feel my fierce desire to converse with a genuine emperor cooling down and passing away. What am I to do with my hands? What am I to do with my feet? What in the world am I to do with myself? Gutenberg Edition. End of chapter.